Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to season 3 of the Unchained Podcast, where we inspire ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Look, I know it's been a while since we've aired. However, I'm super excited we're back, and I'm here to bring fresh new material from those who are excellent at what they do. Season 3 features a list of individuals from all backgrounds who are rising stars in their line of work and their industry. You're not only going to get some inspiring stories to help you change your life, you're going to get ideas as to how you can become unchained and break away from ordinary. Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m. for new episodes at anchor.fm/unchained. That's anchor.fm/unchained. And get inspired on your favorite platforms such as Spotify, Apple, Google, or even Amazon Music, plus many more. Thank you for joining us. And always, as always, break away from ordinary. Catch you later, y'all.
Hey, what is up, guys? Welcome to the Unchained Podcast. We're back for week 3, man, of season 3. I got my man Ryan Hartley here. I'm not even clear like how we know each other. I just know that that must have been on my end, man. I'm not even sure what that was. Do it again.
Try again. Sweet.
Yeah, so I should be right on point now, right?
Yeah, good. You're good.
Yeah, see, that's so weird. But anyway, guys, I got disconnected for a quick second. But anyway, we're back for episode 3 of season 3. I have Ryan Hartley here with Always Better Than Yesterday. I love that. I've always loved that when I read it. Thanks, where'd you come up with that, man?
Well, I have a psychology background. I've always been fascinated by people, why people do what they do, and I guess that kind of led me along the short version of the story is I became a coach. And part of the whole coaching journey, you start to think work with purpose. And my coach was taking me through this purpose activity. And for me, it was about getting clear on what I love to do and what I love to help people do. And I just wrote these words, better than yesterday, down. And I wrote those down 5.5 years ago. I've not ever been able to shake them since. And Always Better Than Yesterday has become, I guess, the name of my company. It's become the name of my community, my podcast. And I guess the short version is that everything used to be from a mind perspective of learning, growing, trying to be better than yesterday, practice makes progress, that kind of spirit of our, but I've really come to deepen my understanding that being better than yesterday isn't a requirement. It is the result. And I think that being better than yesterday is the result of love.
Gotcha. Gotcha, man. Yeah. So that's a beautiful concept. And I think a lot of people have an aspiration to do that.
Yeah.
I just think what's cool about what you do is you're comfortable doing it in a unique way. You know, a lot of people do like podcasts and try to get on the forefront, but it's more so for notoriety and popularity and things of that sort. So I love the genuineness about what you do. And I think we actually connected through, you and Jonathan Darling were. And so I was like, I don't know who this guy is from the UK. So
Yeah. I love Jonathan. He's been a huge part of my story, my community, and I'm grateful for that guy. He's such a wonderful human.
So how did you meet him? How did you meet Jonathan?
Oh, again, it's just the wonderful way the world works. I think, you know, when you start putting out these kind of Batman signals of, hey, this is who I am, this is what I represent, this is what I, the universe goes, hey, like we're like-hearted. We share a similar perspective and similar set of values. And I think I connected with Jonathan through a friend in common called Luke Frazier. Luke was running a nonprofit with a friend of his called Depression to Extinction. Luke had me on his podcast, and I think Jonathan was an ambassador for Depression to Extinction. So that's how Jonathan and I first connected. He was then on my podcast, I think one of my early days, probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And yeah, he's just remained a great friend since.
Oh, sweet, sweet. So I guess like in a wider range of things, like as far as like what you do with Always Better Than Yesterday, like if you could have it do its major thing, right? If it could be all mapped out in one big in one big story, like what does it look like? Do you take this to like seminars? Do you pick out arenas with this message? Like, how do you, you know, like what's the end goal, like for, or what's the climax or the target for Always Better Than Yesterday?
Well, originally it started with take it to the world, right? The ego is like, hey, the world needs this, take it to the world, stages and the masses. Yeah. And as I've kind of journeyed in faith, I've realized that the power is done in the 12, you know? So for me, I've I think I work most powerfully and best when I'm in small groups, either one-to-one or I'm in a small group of people. And then we journey in these principles around what it means to be a heart-centered leader. And then we send those people out into the world. And I've really come to understand that the true beneficiaries of my work are not the people that are, they're not my clients. They are everybody who interacts with my clients. And when I start seeing the world like that, actually the true beneficiaries of the people I work with become their clients. Their business gets filled more with love. Their family, if I'm working with fathers, they become more loving and leading within the home, and the impact then ripples out to their children, and so goes the ripple effect. So for me, it's my mission's got smaller rather than bigger, and that's always one person, one family, one team at a time.
Yeah. So more intimacy is what you're after.
Right. Yeah. Because this stuff's about journeying, you know, being better than yesterday. It's not like, hey, we do it once and it's done. Right. It's about how do we continue? And, you know, I'm setting up a men's group and it's all themed off of Proverbs 27, which is this iron sharpens iron concept, that we continue to learn. We continue to grow in character, in wisdom, in love, in strength, on the day-to-day basis with interactions. And I feel like that's the kind of spirit I bring to work is on the journey. That's for sure.
Gotcha. So you said something about, you know, love-centered leaders.
Yeah.
So for people who don't necessarily know how to articulate what that means, it sounds good. Sounds really great. You know, what is your definition of a love-centered leader?
Well, if we look at the world of leadership, my background is in policing. So I spent 12 years in the UK police service. And leadership looked a lot like rank and hierarchy and the closest parking space to the building and, you know, how long I'd done the job for. And it meant that leaders operated with a spirit of wanting to be served and would be quite willing to sacrifice others should they require it. And I've come to believe that that's not the example of leadership that we should be seeking to follow. The example of leadership we should be looking to follow is the opposite of that, which is the desire to serve others and the willingness to sacrifice should we need to. Now, I think we intellectually get that, but if we intellectually get that, why don't we see that? And it's because it's deeper than intellect, right? The amount of companies that have values on their walls and yet don't live them, these things aren't product of the mind. And so I've journeyed from being a mindset coach to something deeper, which I talk about is heart set. And isn't it, you know, I interviewed a lady called Dr. Deborah Rosman. She's the CEO of an organization called HeartMath. And she said to me, isn't it funny how we don't say I love you with all of my mind? So whenever we're working with values and purpose and character, it's deeper than mindset. And I've coined that term heart set. And so to be a heart-centered leader, it requires two things. One is my willingness to serve others. And the other one being is I'm prepared to sacrifice should I need to. And the reason we don't get those leaders is because not everybody's signed up for that model of leadership. You know, they'd rather be served because they think they've earned the right to be served. And because we live in a world that believes that competition, you know, survival of the fittest, they're quite prepared to sacrifice others. Love looks different. Love looks like I have a sense of values and I have a sense of purpose and I know who I am and I know that I lack nothing and I know my gifts and I know my skills and I know my talents and I know that they're not just for me, but they're for the people in the world who need that. And once I have that sense of security within myself that I don't lack anything, once I can come to the world, I guess not selfish, but self-fullness, and I can overflow my natural tendency. I believe this is true to all human beings, is that if we can get to a point where we lead from love, not for love, our leadership will look a lot more like we rather than me. And I was a kid, you know, I was a kid who probably wasn't feeling very loved, and I sought that love in the world through my work. And I call that leading for love. I was doing great things. I was helping a lot of people. But Ryan Hartley, rather than fix some of the problems that were occurring in his marriage, went to his community where people were loving him. And I was leading for that love, for that validation, for that appreciation. Whereas what I've actually had to learn to do is come back to this sense of self-fullness, realizing that I have all that I need, realizing I've got gifts and skills and talents that the world needs, and my duty is to bring that in the service of others.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful way to explain it. And you said a lot, because as you're talking, like I'm hearing, it's like, you know, this is some of the same things that I teach. You know, I've been doing a class or a course called Self-Mastery 101.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole purpose is to get to know thyself. You know, and I think it's very important to get to know yourself, to know what you can offer others.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you know, a lot of times when you're not fulfilled and you're not confident in who you are, if you don't know what your identity is, you tend to try to, you know, fill that void with other things. And, you know, and I always point people to, you know, Second Peter, in the first chapter, starting in verse 3, and he lists off about 9 virtues, you know. And the thing that always stuck out to me, he says, you know, like you said, we're born complete. There's nothing that we lack. We have everything we need to live a spiritually dynamic life.
Yeah.
I was like, when I first read that, I was like, oh, okay. So I do have value.
Yes.
You know, and that's been one of the things that has stuck with me for years, because what I want most people to understand, and I think you want them to understand this too, is that when, you know, when you're seeking, you know, personal fulfillment, it starts inside. And there's nothing you can buy or a place that you can go or a person you can hook up with, a thing you can buy. There's nothing out there that fills that hole.
Mm.
And a lot of people, sometimes it's a lot later rather than sooner that they get so far down the road, you know, before they realize, you know, everything that I've been looking for this entire time is within me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I remember taking my daughter to see, we saw Frozen 2.
Yeah.
And if you haven't seen that, it's like, you know, this girl's going all over this, you know, this frozen tundra, trying to find her gift. And the very thing she was looking for, the end result was, she's like, hey, you've been looking for you the whole time.
Mm.
You know?
It's a spoiler alert, isn't it? And, you know, the kingdom of God is within. And that isn't a crass terminology. That is a life truth. And the only thing that I would say to anyone listening is, from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to sleep, every marketing message you receive is one that attacks your lack. So we've been conditioned to believe that everything is outside of us. You know, there's happiness in a meal. There's energy in a drink. You know, there's beauty in an aisle or a salon. And everything we've been conditioned to believe is outside of us.
Right.
So it's counter to the world, this idea that we have all that we need. Because what good is that to capitalism and commercialism? If everybody has all that they need, how can I exploit them for their services? How can I how can I make a customer of them?
Yeah.
And you know, so that the world needs us to think and act like that, because otherwise they can't make all their money. But what greater would the world be that says, hey, you have all that you need, and I see that there's something not yet expressed in you, and I'd love to help you bring that to the world. I'd love to help you be an expression of that to the world, rather than you be the definition of everything I want to try and sell you.
Yeah. And, you know, that was the biggest reason I actually left health and fitness.
Yeah.
Because granted, I've got a lot of clients and I was making a lot of money doing it. But what I got tired of doing is I got tired of catering to the external. Everything they wanted was external. And most of my work in the first place was doing the internal work so that they could have the external. So, you know, I was like, hey, why not just focus on the internal?
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll be more led to do the external, and they would have the confidence and wherewithal to go and get it. But, you know, that's a multi-billion dollar business, which, you know, plagues on, you know, like people's insecurities. You know, or we can say lack. This, there's the diet pill, there's the more energy, the bigger muscles, the weight loss, the tummy, like all that stuff, man, it's insane. And people go out there and they will spend their wad. They will do whatever they can to bring in that external. And, you know, and I didn't want to do that anymore. So, yeah.
So you and I connected over a post that I talked about desire. And
I have it right here too.
Yep. Yeah. And I had a particular perspective of desire that was not of, I think it's a double-edged sword, right? I think there's some good elements to desire, and I think there's some lesser, you know, and I think the element of desire, to pick up on the back of what you've just said, is that so much of that lack marketing creates a desire in people, but to create that desire, it first has to plant the belief system that you are not that already. That you are not that already, that you don't have that already, or that you're not loved or accepted for not having and being that already. And that's what I think the danger of desire is, that to desire something, it first has to reveal its absence.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, I describe it with most of my clients and in my teaching, I describe it as a coin.
Mm-hmm.
That the best parts you believe about yourself and the worst parts you believe about yourself are on the same coin. And what I like to draw people to is during a coaching session, I like to draw them to the very thing that you feel like you desire the most, the thing that's really driving you to your knees in prayer, the thing that's really is the cross. This is your figurative cross is what's making you bleed every day, right? It's that one thing that you really want. But the funny thing is that when you look at that thing that you want, that's the very thing you're called to do or become. You see what I'm saying? And so when we talk about the enemy, and I think a lot of people use it as, oh, there's an enemy outside of us, but I mean everybody's dual-minded. The enemy is within, and it's that negative thought process that always tells you this is what you don't have, this is who you got to be, this, and then on the light side, there's those moments of confidence, and people they and you've done this before, where you've had these moments where you're like, you know what, I can do it. 10 minutes later, it's like, no, you can't. And it's an inward battle. And so what I try to express is I like, look, if you say this is your main desire and this thing is really eating at you, and you say this is what you don't have, and a lot of the story that you tell yourself is all based on a traumatic moment. It's all based on that. So what happens if you actually look at the highest moments of your life? And you will notice that the highest moments and the lowest moments are equally, they're reflective. And guess what? They generate the same emotion. It's just one is distorted. So a person who feels like I'm not worthy or I'm not good enough, the same trauma they experienced made them feel like what? They weren't worthy and they weren't good enough. Right? So when I can get a person there, then they can kind of understand. And you're absolutely right. And I think that's the culmination of what we got to on the message is that post you said about desire, it can drain you. Or it can propel you. It just depends on which heart set you're gonna look at it from, right?
Yeah, and that's it. And I think if and that's where we have to check our desires. Do they come from my desire to be an expression of that, or do they come from my desire, which is rooted in fear that I am not that?
Yes.
And I think if we're able to check ourselves, is it's the desire itself is not the problem. It is what is the thing that we're attaching to that desire, because if we're attaching some form of love or significance or worth or value, well, that more of the world is never going to satisfy, right? Because it's actually not connecting with that belief that we are not that to begin with. On the other side, it is that do I have a desire to bring? So I believe our heart's true desire is to bring our full selves to the world in fullest, in the most fullest expression as possible. When we realize, and we talk about the body of Christ, or maybe we can just see the image of like a jigsaw puzzle of 8 billion pieces, we have the humility to realize that we are just one piece of that puzzle, right? So don't get too big for yourself. Like you are just one of 8 billion. But then there's the opposite that says, well, you have a huge amount of responsibility because unless you place yourself in that space where only you can place yourself, the puzzle remains incomplete. And that's where I think desire is pure, is that, hey, use me. You've given me this gift, this skill, this talent, whatever this might be, and I'm just going to show my willingness to bring that in the service of those who need it. Other fractals of God, other expressions of God. If we were good at everything, we wouldn't have a need for each other. That's why it's called a gift, because there I have something that actually isn't just meant for me. It becomes a gift because I give it away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I think a lot of people don't really understand, what the expression of the body of Christ. I don't think people understand what that really means. Because we were made to link together. And if you notice, some of the most powerful companies, most powerful businesses, I don't care if people like them or not, they are operating at such a high level because they found a way to connect and they found a way to do away with all the bickering and the backbiting and all the things of that sort, and they're able to conglomerate over one common goal, and I think a lot of times, when you're, like you said, when you're trying to attach yourself to a desire that only edifies something that you want versus being the thing you desire, it leaves you to, do the finger pointing and to kind of distance yourself away from others. And you make judgments about, oh, they're not this or they're not that. And I think the best way I've heard that explained is I think was with Neville Goddard. He said, The opinion you place on others is just your opinion about yourself pushed outward. So, right? But when you actually understand that you possess the very thing that, that you condemn another for, he said that's where the self-awareness begins. That's where the root work goes, so you can kind of determine or have discernment from there as to why do you want this, or why do you don't, or why do you not want that, and have the courage and confidence to really check yourself, on why you want the thing you say you want.
It's so ironic that Neville Goddard quote, isn't it? But you said the word self-awareness, and one of the things in policing that we used to teach detectives was this idea called the Lockhart's exchange principle. And we used to teach our detectives this mindset because it's the idea that every contact leaves a trace, which is useful for a detective, right? Because you're starting to think, when I go to the scene, I'm thinking about what might the offender have left of themselves at the scene. If I can find that, I might be able to find them. But we need to teach leaders that same concept, this idea that every contact leaves a trace. And some people do that consciously and intentionally, and some people are doing it unconsciously. And that gift that you're giving people of that self-awareness increases their ability to make actions, decisions, leadership interactions that lead to greater outcomes, greater possibilities than maybe if we lead from our programs subconsciously. As I say, you're leaving an impact, and I call that word heartprint. Leaders leave heartprints. You leave people feeling something after you've interacted with them. Sometimes that's positive, sometimes that's negative. And I think when you equip people with a greater level of self-awareness, what you actually lead them to is getting better outcomes and possibilities from themselves and other people.
I think Tony Robbins describes, because the difference being, motivation and inspiration. You might really motivate somebody to do something, but that's not much of a heart print. It's like a warm bath water is what he says.
It's like codependency, yeah.
But to inspire something, that means the person who came, if I went in a room and I gave it my all. More than likely, when you give your all, you're very confident in what you do and who you are. And when you put it all out there, I think a lot of people, can sense genuineness. People can tell the thing of the spirit of the thing. They can tell if your message is if you're wanting money or if you're being authentic, if you're trying to condemn or if you're trying to encourage.
Well,
People can understand that. And I think when you go in a room and you just lay it out there, more than likely, people are going to want to follow you. They're going to be inspired, to do some better work or some greater work, or to dig within themselves. So I think a lot of times too, that's kind of reflective of, you can kind of tell, the kind of work that you do, is, oh, well, I didn't really impact anybody. There's some negativity with what I just did. There's some negative feedback. So again, you can self-check that, you can autocorrect, and you can put yourself on the path to, acquire the heart. My wife and I were praying yesterday. And the one thing she knows that I pray for is for me to know the hearts of the people that, that I minister to, because I want to speak their language. I want to give them the most intimate parts of myself, so they know that what I'm giving you is not because I don't really care to have your money. I'd rather, see you healed and delivered. And I know the money will come on the back end, but that I don't lead with that. I lead with people in mind,
That's powerful. And as you were speaking, I just had this image of an arrow, and sometimes that arrow goes from the stage and it reveals to the people that I have power over you. And I prefer to be the other type of speaker that is actually looking at the power within you. And that might sound cliche, that might sound crass, but it's just a different spirit, different energy. And I don't want people to be dependent on anything I say or anything I do. I think any podcast I put out, any coaching session I have, it has to point to the power within people, so that it creates that one degree of possibility, in some way that we've found something, uncovered something within you, now that you can build, a whole, that in some way everything's changed. Things will never be the same again, even just to a one degree of possibility. And all the things that then can shoot off of that because of that insight, that action, that belief of who you are and how you can then show up with that. That for me is the thing that inspires me no end, is the ripple effect that even just a small thing can do.
I think that's one of my approaches, is I want to look for that crack that you have,
Yeah.
You know, that little place in you where, you know, you're starting to see where you are, but you're not really sure. You know, so you err on the side of, you know, the old, you know, negative thoughts. And that was the biggest reason I got into neuroscience and neuro-linguistic programming and doing breath work and all those things, is because I want to get to the root of the problem. You know, I don't want to give you, I don't want to medicate you. You know, a lot of people, you know, they have a headache, you know, they take an Advil or an Aleve, and you're medicating the problem, but you're not fixing the problem. You know, your headache's going to come from either dehydration, not enough food. You know, maybe you're coming off of something, but you don't have a headache for lack of having Advil. So, you know, but for most people, you know, they have this burning desire to really be something, but the only thing that's really standing in their way, you know, is the story that they tell themselves about themselves. And I want to get to the root of that. You know, I want to have that conversation, you know, to get to the root of it, the root cause of it. And then I want to reach down in and I want to yank the root out. And then we can go burn it together. You know what I mean? We want to expose that thing to light. And so that's what I live for. Like that moment, you know, and I think part of the work is getting the people to actually be vulnerable. That's the hardest work. Because if we're being honest, everybody who's listening right now, you know, people don't lie because they just really want to lie. They lie because they're afraid. If I tell you who I really am, you may not like me. And I think a lot of times in this world, you know, there's a lot of judgment, a lot of cynicism, a lot of cynical people, you know, a lot of people pointing the finger. And people are afraid to be authentic and be vulnerable. And it's hard to trust other people for fear that, you know, if I tell you this, you might not like me, you might pull away, and you might put my head on a stake along with all the other people with all the other people you've taken down. But I live for that moment, you know, to get to the heart of the matter, because I really want to see people healed and delivered and actually operating in their full potential. That's what I thrive on.
Yeah, I love that. I love that.
What'd you say?
I said, yeah, mate, love that. The world needs more of that.
Yeah. So here's another thing I was curious about. Like, I know you get like a lot of people on your podcast. Like, how do you go about the person you go to pick and share with the world? Because I've seen a lot of them, and man, some of these people are so insightful. You know, they're great at what they do. So I love listening to some of them, you know. So like, how do you go and pick out your guests?
Well, so I published episode 210 yesterday, and I guess two things really. One is that I'm really clear on what I want my podcast to be about, which is good conversations with good people doing good things, right? And then once you start knowing that, I guess they kind of reveal themselves to you. You know, when you see their work, when you experience the way that they speak, when you see what they're putting out, when you see some of the things that they stand for, that it kind of reveals itself to me. And I guess that's kind of become second nature when I've done 200 of them. You know, and then the other thing is I write a list. So, you know, for example, I had Matthew McConaughey on the podcast. And at one point in time, I sat down and wrote on my list, who would my who's at my top, if I could, he's who would be my top guests, and I think that's really important as well, just to go, okay, well, if I could have anybody on, because I think what that does is two things. One is it first reveals that you believe that to be possible. Like, that's the biggest gift for me in interviewing an Oscar winner, is not having interviewed him. Is that I became someone that even thought it was possible. And people misunderstand that. People think, because here's the biggest question that I got after interviewing Matthew: who next? Who next? Who next? They misunderstand that I don't need anything next, because I became someone that even thought it was possible. That in itself was huge enough for me. You know, this little lad from the southwest of England sharing time and space, it just made no sense. So yeah, I write a list, and that helps me kind of think, okay, what's possible, and who would be my ideal guest, and that kind of plays back to me the type of people that I'm seeking out in the world, and allowing them to come back. Top of my list right now is a guy called Harry Mack. Harry Mack is a freestyle rapper. And I think he's got an incredible
guy. Dude, you give him a topic and he's anywhere, anytime. And,
yeah. And the reason I want to speak to him is because I think he's a wonderful example of two things. Heart for just sharing his gift with the world, I think is an incredible gift. And then the other side of that thing was, well, how did he craft his gift? Because that takes an obscene amount of devotion and discipline and practice and failing and all sorts. And yeah, I think he's a wonderful example of someone that really is bringing heart work to the world. And just when I talk about heart print and the leaving a light on other people, seeing people's faces as he walks around the street and rapping, and like, he's bringing joy to people's day and lives. And I just think he's a great example of the things that I kind of talk about.
I think that's a beautiful thing. You know, sometimes, you know, it's like, I don't really do social media a lot, but I look for, the one thing I like from social media is I like to see people operating in their gift.
That
warms my heart. That makes me smile. And I think that kind of fuels the work that, you know, you and I do as well, you know, to get a person to that point, you know, because when I first saw him like do that, I was like, nah, there's no way he did that. When I saw him do it like 5 or 6 times, with the random, I was like, okay, yeah. Now this is something, you know, like you said, like this is a skill.
Yeah. You know, and that's what I think amazing. Greatness does. You know, a lot of people out there want to talk about being great. And I'm all for that. Great. But I think what the most important thing about greatness is it reveals human potential.
Yeah.
It reveals what is humanly possible. Yes. And I think that's really powerful.
Yeah. And so I think that's an amazing thing, you know. So it's funny because you said something, you know, that kind of resonated with me. You said that you just write a list, you know, and you said the thing is that it reveals what's possible. For the people out there who are listening, because I've done this before too, I've wrote something down and then bam, it happened, you know, because a lot of people they think for some reason that that's kind of like mysticism, like some kind of weird, you know, mysticism kind of thing. Mm-hmm. That's just God's law. That to write something down is, in order to write it down, it takes guts to even write it. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you feel like that made other things you wanted to accomplish easier?
Well, I think one of the things it does in writing it down is that you are capturing that moment of truth. The truth is subjective, other than the way the truth, but our truth is one of subjective. But that in that moment was, I guess, a channeling of what's possible, right? And I think, so when I help people with their coaching and this sense of their heart set, I get them to write it down. Why? Because the closer they are to bringing the light to the world, the louder the enemy gets.
Yes.
Because, and that's the most important thing of writing it down, is almost that becomes your truth to speak back to the lies that the enemy is inevitably going to spring on us. So when we understand that the darkness itself is not an entity, that actually darkness is simply the absence of light, that thing that we've written down become a reminder, and it can cut through that darkness and bring light back. And because I guess it's like the whole Garden of Eden type thing, is that the only way that the enemy won on that occasion was to have Adam and Eve doubt to begin with. And right. So for me to stop you, or for me to stop me bringing the thing that we need to the world, is to doubt that it's even needed, to doubt that it's even good enough, to doubt that anyone would even use it, to be so distracted from even bringing it, or just being told pure lies. And I think writing stuff down is the best way of speaking truth to that lies.
So it sounds like you have a lot of personal experience with that voice in your head telling you
mate. And I think I've made peace with the fact that I shouldn't be surprised that that keeps coming up. Because it means I'm closer to doing God's work than ever. You know, so many people talk about, oh, imposter syndrome. Well, what if that was just a symptom of you not having done it before? Like, ain't no one feel like an imposter like Moses did. And yet God said, what's that in your hand? He's reminding Moses, he's got all that you need.
Yeah.
I just want your heart. I just want your willingness to bring it. And so I've given myself this big bubble of grace to say, do you know what? For as long as I'm doing God's work and I'm out on the water and I'm pushing my comfort zone, and I'm always going to be equipped with this other spirit. I'm always going to be, like you said, that kind of good and evil within. I'm always going to get attacked by that And so having a method of going what's mine and what's not is been really helpful just to keep me moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's a powerful point. You know, and I don't think a lot of people understand it. I didn't get it for a while. You know, is that when you actually achieve something, it's very important that you don't get comfortable after you achieve the thing.
Sure.
Because, you know, when you actually achieve something, you know, you're programmed to want more, do more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so as you approach it, it's like, I'm kind of fine right here. You know, and what happens is you actually self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And you talk yourself to either staying complacent or going back to square one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think people need to understand that too, because there's a lot of people right now, for some reason, unless I just see it more now, that in 2023, everybody is pushing toward becoming better.
Yeah.
I think the world is in a place now where they're kind of panicked about, you know, what they see on the news and, you know, money and this and that. Mm. You know, and it looks like the entrepreneur is going to run the world.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this is it. You know, and I think for as long as we are in the spirit of push your comfort zone, we run the risk of being in the fight, flight, freeze kind of mentality. And I think that's dangerous for leaders and people because it doesn't always give us full access to our consciousness.
Right.
The presence of cortisol, the presence of stress, it reduces the access to the prefrontal cortex, meaning we become less logical, less rational, more impulsive, and it doesn't get the best out of us. And one of the so that's the hardcore advice, right, in the personal development area. Get out your comfort zone. The risk of that is that we don't actually come across as fully human. We come across more chimp. So the wonderful thing that I heard from a guy called Alex Hanold, who is in the documentary Free Solo. So this guy, there's some mountains, is it El Capitan or Yosemite? He climbs these mountains without any equipment. Mate, if you've got anxiety, do not watch that documentary, because like for half an hour, I don't think I breathed once. It was ridiculous. But one of the things that he said really captured my mind. He says, whilst I am up there on that mountain, it's not about overcoming my fear, because if I can't, I will die. He said, it's about expanding my comfort zone. And I think that's a really powerful way to look at it, particularly as leaders, because we want to be operating from that comfort zone of, hey, I'm in control. I'm logical. I'm rational. I'm emotive. I can focus on we rather than me. Because that's what fight, flight, freeze is going to do. It's going to focus on me rather than we. So if I can expand my comfort zone, I'm still growing, but I'm doing so from a measured perspective of how I lead people. I'm still being conscious with the way I lead people. And I think that's important.
Right. So, and I know how I tell people to deal with that. You know, because someone would say, well, how do I expand my comfort zone? You know? Yeah. And so I always start with people. I say, look, self-awareness, number one, there's mm-hmm. a self-examination mm-hmm. you got to have. Put on like your little spiritual gloves, give yourself a checkup. And the way I like to describe it is if you could take your mind and set it on the table, you know, if there's a way you could look at it, you know, mm-hmm. I was like, don't think about your brain. I'm talking about your mind. If you could literally take your mindset and look at it and dissect it and see where the negative thoughts come from, the fear, the anxiety, the worry, what happens if I step outside? What happens if I go outside this comfort zone right here? Mm-hmm. You know, and like you said, you know, or what would happen if I try to expand my comfort zone? Like, what does that look like? I tell people observation or self-observation is the number one thing. That's first mm-hmm, and foremost. Mm-hmm. And what advice would you give somebody who says, well, you know, Ryan, I hear what you're saying. Mm-hmm. There's a mountain I want to climb. Yep. How do I expand my comfort zone?
Well, so I think there's this idea that, you know, we've got to create headspace, right? So you talked earlier about breath work. And breath work is a wonderful way of creating headspace, which is our ability to think calmly and clearly. But what most people don't realize is that headspace is made possible through heart connection. So I talked earlier about the HeartMath Institute. And what that institute has found scientifically is that when we create coherence between our heart wave and our brain waves, it sends a signal to the rest of our body that we are good, we are okay. And the body can be in two situations. It can be in sympathetic arousal or parasympathetic arousal. One is kind of rest and digest, and it's good for healing and growth. And the other one is prepared to run away from danger, right? And the more that if we are in danger, or at least we're stressed in a leadership setting, our ability to get ourselves back into that cool, calm, rest, digest is going to enable us to lead better. It's like being in I guess the All Blacks, the rugby team, they call it about getting back to the blue mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess that is self-leadership. Our ability to go from that stressful environment and bring ourselves back into that moment gives us access. So the more that we can practice turning that, and that's where I get into ice baths, because we can't control some of the stress that life puts on us. But ice baths, cold showers, breath work, that is us putting stress on ourselves now so that we get used to this idea of being able to manage stress. People might look at you going, oh man, you're crazy. But it honestly is an incredible way of subjecting the body to a lot of stress and finding calm and peace in that moment. So that's one of the things, is being able to, in that moment, come back to self, whether that be through breath work, whether that be through self-talk. And the other thing is repetition, you know, getting the reps in. It becomes easier the more that you do it. Becomes more second nature.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, it's like they say, like the wealthy have routines. You know, your success is in the routine. Mm-hmm. And gosh, man, I wish we could do this for another hour. But what I hear you say a lot of, though, because a lot of people, man, they don't have a routine. It's like, yep. All right, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to just go for it.
Yeah.
Going for what? You know, the best way I've heard it explained is like, you know, if you were like the old Rambo movie, just come in, just shooting everything, like you may have hit the person, but you tore up all the other stuff along with it. You know what I mean? And sometimes when you're not, when you don't have anything written down, if you don't know what you're shooting for, if you don't have a routine, what happens is you end up like uprooting a lot of different areas of your life. Like you might get there, but you might have torn up your family to get there. You might have, you know, broken some relationships to get there. There's so much you tear up because, you know, you're Rambo who with the gun versus the sniper, the person who lay there on his belly for 3 days waiting for the target. He's not shooting, he's not wasting the extra energy, just being patient with his eye focused and waiting on the one thing, right? So that's kind of how I see that. And that's one of the things that I try to get my, you know, my clients to do is like, hey, what routine can we develop to where you get a win every day? And you can, you know, because the more wins you get, the more confidence you get. You know, we look at sports all the time. You know, teams don't really get hot until they string together a couple wins. Mm. You know, but if you put yourself in a position where you're going to fail every day, how do you expect to win?
Mm. Yeah. Well, this is it. And, you know, there's this idea of be, do and have, right? And the world has convinced us that we need to do more and have more in order to feel like we are more. And I prefer to do the other thing from the inside out, which is about, first and foremost, every single day, who do we want to be? Who do I want to be? How do I want to show up? And like you say, that requires the self-awareness that I even know who I am.
Yes.
How can I go and be that person in the world if I don't know who I am? All the things that I'm good at, all the things that I'm not so good at, all the things I desire, all the things that I want to bring to the world. How can I be an expression of that to its fullest potential if I haven't a clue who Ryan Hartley is? And how can I then go and put myself in spaces and places to go and do my best work so that I may have whatever is meant for me? We're too busy focused on the outcome. We're too busy focused on the people, possessions, places that we forget, for first and foremost, that true manifestation isn't out there and in the future. It comes from who we are being in this very moment.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, and I'm glad you're saying this, because I've explained that to some people and they act like they don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
There's a lot you want to accomplish, but you're not going to get there if you don't know you first.
Yeah, if you're outwardly expressing a behavior of being a bit of a jerk, then you're going to manifest a punch on the nose. Like, let's be clear, you manifested that through who you were being. Not because of the prayer you said before you got out, but because of the way you are being. And that is true. If you are being someone who is consistent and disciplined, does what's difficult, and you're doing the work, well, then you will have whatever is meant for someone who gets after it and does that.
Yeah. I tell people like this, you know, there's nothing you do in this world that hasn't you know, that where there hasn't been a thought that preceded it first. You know, the action that comes out of you, your responses, your reactions to things, that's only in alignment with what you're already thinking and what you believe about yourself. You know, and a lot of people, it's like they try to out trick their own mind. Like, no, like I can tell who you are and what you think about how you behave, you know, your responses to situations, how you do things. And it doesn't make you a bad person. You know, it just means that you're in cognitive dissonance. You say you want this, but you're doing this, right? Yeah. So your desires and your actions, they aren't matching up. So, you know, I explain it like this as well. You know, you ever see a person who says they're going to stop smoking, but they have cigarettes in their pocket? Like, cigarettes are bad. Okay, so why are you smoking them? You know what I mean?
Oh, one doesn't hurt. And this is the thing with cognitive dissonance, isn't it? You've got two choices. Make excuses or change your behavior. And I know which one's easier, right?
Right. You know, and we say everybody has an excuse bag.
Right.
You know, they walk around with a bag of excuses, and you know, you want to accomplish this, and you say, oh, well, why didn't you sign up for that program? Hold on, let me get my excuse bag. And I'm gonna pull something out of that. You know, I don't have the funds, I don't have the time, whatever it might be, you know. And I learned this a long time ago, and it was funny because I got this from Grant Cardone years ago. And there was a point where I would, you know, have like, you know, like struggles with money, whatever, and he would say, and he said he stopped making those assumptions. He stopped saying, like, you know, I don't have, he stopped using that terminology. And so he started saying, who's got my money? And he says it in a more of an aggressive way, but what he really means is, I have a gift, somebody's willing to pay for it. Who are those people? You get what I'm saying? So in other words, he says, I can unlock this financial need right now just by being me. I got something that people want. And so I don't think, and I've explained this to some people before, that, you know, people don't understand that money is a spiritual currency. It is. It's only going to be, and I'm not talking about the people that have lied to get it or cheated to get it. We know that's short-lived. But, you know, it always matches your mindset, always. You know, and so when I explain it to folks, they go, no. I said, well, prove me wrong, because there's, you know, there's something in you that, you know, when you align, like we talked about, when you're in alignment, both head and heart, it's like, you know, God just says, all right, here we go. He opens the door and everything comes out, you know, but it's like the moment where you hit a wall with something inside of you that you're not yet identified, you haven't fixed that issue, that place you haven't dug, or that place you keep closed off. That's the one area that you struggle. So it could be money. It could be relationships. It could be faith. It could be family problems. But the part you keep gated off, the thing that you haven't really discovered about you in that area, is often a place that you lack. And it doesn't make you a bad person. It just means you're ignorant in that area. You know, and as long as you carry around your bag of excuses, you're not going to shine any light over there. You're not. Hey, why don't you turn the light on over there in the corner? I ain't got no light bulbs. You know? Yeah. You can do that, though. You have the power to do that. And I think that's where most people get caught up is, you know, again, and I think this goes back to what we said, like, in the first 5 minutes, they're always looking without, you know, instead of going within. And it's probably end up titling this podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, and there's a reason why Dr. Joe Dispenza says that you have to think and feel greater than your current circumstances.
Yeah, and I love the way he explains that. You know, the fact that he goes through the whole issue of how, not the issue, but the sequence of how habits and things are formed, you know, and he said this, and I remember it like it was yesterday. He said, any experience created once can be created again. And we often create the same experiences. And the more, again, like we talked about that, when we're in that mindset of stress and anxiety, fear, lack, and worry, what we do is we shrink our ability to create. And we stay stuck in this small space where we feel like there's no way out. And we're suffocating. And we're walking around like laughing and smiling, but on the inside, man, we feel like we're about to die. But he says, if you can actually, you know, step out of that for a moment and think about what it is you want to create. Like we talked about, the courage to write it down, the courage to dream, like just dare to dream. I think this kind of answered, you know, our question from earlier. This is kind of how we can... we can expand our comfort zone. You know, you don't have to do anything out there first, but why not just write it down? Why not just imagine what life would look like if you had everything you wanted right now? And by doing that, you're going to create a different experience, a different emotion. And again, if that touches you in a deep way, why not just do it again? As a matter of fact, I also like to explain it like this. You know, I always take Hebrews 11 and 1. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things not seen. Everybody holds a cell phone. That was the substance of a thing hoped for. And nobody had a cell phone until somebody said, you know what? I wonder what it would look like if I could call someone without being attached to a wall. If I could walk around with this phone in my pocket. And the more they thought about it and the more joy and excitement they got, what happened? Man, we have cellular technology in almost everything. Earbuds, watches, you know what I mean? And so I think for the person that's listening out there, Ryan has dropped some good nuggets today. He really has.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
You know, but he's really calling you to be self-aware. This, you know, what we've been talking about has nothing to do with me. I was just very curious about, you know, always better than yesterday, because I knew it had a deeper meaning to it. And I think, you know, for closing thoughts, man, I would want you to just tell people how they can be better today than yesterday, and how they can make the next steps to do that every day, like we said, to develop a routine. You know, how would they go about doing that?
Well, let's start with the most powerful of ripple effects, because I believe that when we lead ourselves, we become better to lead others. And there goes the ripple effect. So it always comes back to love for self. And I don't mean that like in the crass hedonistic self-love, like many people are talking about in the world. What it means is that you realize the child of God that you are, all the things you are, all the things you have, all the things you're good at, all the things that are the opposite side of that coin that you're not so good at, your flaws, your mistakes. And realize that there's some scripture that says, you know, the thorns in our flesh. But I read the Passion Translation of that scripture, and it says that in your weakness, you will find God's full expression. And I love that idea, that actually sometimes it's because of the things that we think are our weaknesses that allow our true strength and the depth of our character and our compassion and the things that we love to do in the world. They so often come from the things that we wish might not have happened to ourselves. And I think love starts there, is being able to accept all of it, not just the light, all the good, all the things that we think we should present to the world, but start with loving all of it. Maybe with a bit of humor, a bit of, oh, why do I keep doing these things? I think humor is a vibrational frequency raiser. I think it gets us closer to the joy rather than shame. And start there. And when you start to have love and acceptance for self, for who we truly are, we start to unlearn who we are not. And then we start to gain the courage and the perspective to go, hey, do you know what? Maybe I do have something to bring to the world in the service of others. And when you start doing that from a heart perspective, not because I have to, but because I want to, and then you see the transformations that you can facilitate by doing what you love, man, that's a powerful ripple effect. Like, and I encourage people who have experienced that to keep doing it, because the world needs whatever you have been given.
Sweet, sweet. Yeah, man. So where can people find you, man, before we get off here? Where can people connect with you, chat with you, like your stuff?
Thanks, brother. Always better than yesterday. Facebook, we're on Instagram. And our website is abty.co.uk. abty.co.uk.
All right, man. I appreciate your time today. I know you probably got a busy schedule. And I'll let you Thanks, get man. To it, man. I'm going to go in here and kiss my baby.
Yeah, man. Yeah, love. Thank you, man. I appreciate you reaching out and having me on. I really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah, hope we can do it again, brother, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, man.
I have a blessed one, man.